Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the holy ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
I'm Austin Powers, and I like Gas Mojo. It's a very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby, yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Hi, folks. We've got Sasha and Sandra on the line. Sorry about the problems, but I wasn't able to reach their phone for some reason, but they were able to call in. Anyway, Sasha, Les likes to be called Alex, so we'll call him Alex. And let me tell you a little bit about him. He holds bachelor's, master's, and PhD in anthropology psychology from UCLA. He has widely varied interests, including tantra, anthropology, relationship counseling, psychology. He's a Renaissance man, no problem. And the reason why I wanted to follow up on this is because my traditional teachers, Cherokee teachers, told me that somehow we had migrated here from the stars. And this is not only a Cherokee teachings. I've heard it from other directions. And anyway, Dr. Lesson, Alex, we're really honored to have you on the show. We want to, now that Dr. Sitchin's no longer with us, this is a subject that really needs a good spokesman. I'm sure there's a bunch out there, but from what I could see, you seem to be the guy that was the standout on this subject. And anyway, welcome to Prophecy Keepers Radio, Alex.
Thank you. Yeah, the native traditions do indeed confirm the ancient Sumerian writings that Sitchin translated. The Navajo talk after the Great Flood 13,000 years ago, humans had to come out again. They dug out of the earth at the caves where they survived and where mm-hmm. their environment had been totally wrecked by the Great Flood. That's the very flood that sunk the huge land of Mu, which was a combination of all the Polynesian islands, and sunk Atlantis between Europe and North America. And there was such huge upheavals that the native traditions, because they weren't in denial, all said the same story. We had to dig out of the earth,
mm-hmm.
and it was a mess.
And I guess about 10 or 15 years ago, Robert Morningsky published the similarities between the Sumerian and the Hopi language, and they're stunning.
Yeah, it all comes from the same source. Since you mentioned the source, it's really interesting. Works that Sitchin translated, fortunately, unfortunately for Ashurbanipal, his library got burned down and all the clay tablets got fired into pottery, and so they were preserved and so that they could be read. And all the vast history of humanity for the last 300,000 years were all recorded in clay, in a language that is translated, and we know that when we get into the story, that Native Americans were brought over to particularly Tiwanaku to help with the mining in the Andes and to the Tenochtitlan and the Mayan areas, and that basically there was sea transport and even rocket transport for the supervisors, and American Indians have been here for a long time. They didn't just cross over the Bering Strait. Yeah, people came there that way, but Native Americans have been here a long time.
Yeah, our Cherokee elders have said since time immemorial that we migrated here across the Eastern Ocean in boats.
Yeah,
and recently with the discovery of the projectile point at Cactus Hill and the subsequent carbon dating and other things, you know, you've got television productions like Who Really Discovered America and Ice Age Columbus, and these were Bear Clan people. The one of the little known things is that all Cherokee clans are Bear Clan, and the Bear Clan originated in Europe. So science is just proving what our elders have said all along.
Yeah, perhaps we should take it back even to the beginning when the ETs arrived here.
Mm-hmm.
These are fellows, great big, 8 foot to 12 foot people who came from the planet Nibiru, which comes through our solar system every 3,600 years or so, and they had. They were losing their atmosphere as their nemesis, which is the sun, the binary to our Solaris, was cooling, and they needed their atmosphere. They had lost a lot of it from their thermonuclear wars that they had before their planet became unified, and they were polluting and all kind of, you know, same kind of problems we have, and so they were really desperate. And so one of the royals pushed the king off of a tower and stole a rocket ship where they had nukes in the rocket ships where they had been using to bomb the volcanoes, hoping to put a dust cloud up that would keep the atmosphere. And this is 450,000 years ago. The guy's name was Olalu, and he landed in the Persian Gulf. They knew from their probes that there was gold there. They wanted to seed monatomic gold in their atmosphere to make a shield for the atmosphere. And so they knew there was gold in the Persian Gulf, and what they found, of course, there wasn't much gold there, but they traced where it was coming from, and it was coming from Africa. And so there's about 600 astronauts and 50 medical doctors, women. The rest were men, and they started digging gold. Well, after a while, the astronauts mutinied. They said, "We're eating dirt. We're not going to do this. We want out of here." And their chief scientist said, "Hey, you know what? I got an idea. There's these humans who are here. They're survivors from even earlier settlements, and they're really pretty smart. They're unusual because they're so compassionate. They keep letting animals out of the traps. But we could put our genes on their genes, engineer them together, and we'll make some disposable mind slaves, and then they'll work for us." And so this is 300,000 years ago, and this is the first experiment. They basically created the Neanderthals, and then the scientists kept breeding with them, and pretty soon a really very, very smart type of human, the Cro-Magnon guys, and it scared them because they said, "Oh my gosh, there's millions of them. They really bred fast, and there's only about 1,000 of us. We got to keep them dumbed down and make sure that they don't get too healthy," and so forth. But there was a big demand for them, and so forth. But finally, they got enough gold. They had several things happening, but they could see that one of the passes of Nibiru through the inner solar system was going to cause the ice sheet on top of Antarctica to slip into the South Sea and cause this huge flood. And so the commander, his name was Enlil or Yahweh, said, "Look, don't tell the Earthlings about this or they'll mob the spaceports and we won't be able to get off. Those of you who have made families with these Earthlings, you'll go to high ground. The rest of us will orbit or go to the moon or the Mars where we have a transshipment base, and let these creatures die. They're an illegal race, and we're not supposed to have them anyway." Well, a chief scientist whose direct son was the guy Americans call Noah, his real name was Yasudra, put a computer program in Noah's wall, which said how to make a submersible, and Enki, the scientist, left his son Nergal to steer the thing, and they landed on Mount Ararat in Turkey. And also, of course, they also had a big base takeoff in Nazca on the plains on top of the Andes. And so there were these, and that was staffed both by Africans and Native Americans. The descendants of Cain had been genetically marked after he killed Abel, so they didn't have facial hair. So they were all okay up in the mountains, too. But when they landed on Mount Ararat, and they could see Noah and his people were alive, and besides that, Enki had buried lots of seeds and starch and genetic starch and diorite chambers in Iraq, but it was all under mud. When the commander Enlil Yahweh saw it, he said, "I'm gonna kill you. How dare you let these people survive? They're supposed to be dead." He said, "Hey, now wait a minute." And his sister and his son said, "Hey, wait, Dad, don't kill them. We can govern through them. We'll let them breed, divide the world up, and they'll be our rulers, and we'll just sit back and be gods to them." And so they proceeded, but nevertheless, these different gods started fighting with each other. They weren't gods; they were just big people. And humans were just like cannon fodder for them, and they used techno weapons, and they killed millions of people and so forth. But after a while, one faction nuked the other faction. They dropped atomic bombs on the south side of the Dead Sea and the whole Sinai Peninsula, where they had a runway and a takeoff. The mission control was in Jerusalem. The fallout from the nuclear cloud blew all over the Middle East, all over Sumer, but the winds changed and it saved Babylon. So one of the competitors, a guy named Marduk, or he was named as Ra, in Egypt prevailed, and he displaced Thoth, his brother, who was ruling Egypt at the time. So Thoth built some, he went to England first and made some observatory. Stonehenge was one of those. And then he went to Mesoamerica, where he was known as the feathered serpent, or Quetzalcoatl, and he brought his Mesopotamian guys, bearded Sumerian-type guys, to run things, and he had his technicians, the black Nigerian-looking fellows, and the laborers were the American Indians, the descendants of Cain, who had spread. And he brought people both from the east side and from the west side, especially to go to Tiwanaku and up in the Andes. And so humans, most of the Anunnaki, that's what they were called, these people from Nibiru, went back to their planet after 2025 BC, but some of them stayed, and their descendants, the hybrids, the particular group that they favored, still to this day, somewhat hidden, rule this world and pit us against each other so that we don't realize that they're really controlling everything from the top.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you something you may not have ever heard of. Question first. These red-haired giants whose mummies have been discovered, how are they associated with these astronauts?
It depends on what level they were found at, but the ones from 450,000 years ago on were from Nibiru, but there was much earlier, cremalists on much earlier skeletons, way, way down, I mean at the 60 million level and earlier, and highly developed people that had pottery and technological sophistication to get to the planet. And these did not evolve on the planet. We did not come out of primates, out of lemurs and apes at all, but full-on human beings. They were different sizes, have been here for a long time, and Homo erectus, of which we're half, was one of these survivors. There was four times during the Permian, there was these tremendous wipeout, extinction levels. What happens is whenever Nibiru comes through, it depends on whether we're on the opposite side of the sun from it or whether on the same side, there's terrible things that happen. And right now in 2012, it's not Nibiru, but it's what's known as the Lagrange points. The Lagrange points means that where any planet that is going around and around a star, or in this case two stars, a binary, has 180 degrees from it and 90 degrees from it, a bunch of junk, like comets, meteorites, bits of asteroids, and that's what's coming through now, the 180 Lagrange point. Sedna, for example, was in that. And there's this big gap in the comet clouds, in the Kuiper clouds and the Oort clouds. When this stuff comes through and it brings all this stuff coming to Earth and makes a mess. The waters are from the are mainly frozen ice and rocks and stuff from the time that Nibiru actually and one of its moons collided with Earth, hit the Pacific Basin and gouged it out. And all the land that was left came to the other side, which was called Pangaea. There was just a big gaping hole, and the waters ran into this hole. The mantle in the Pacific is only 12 miles deep. And it's all from sediment that ran into the sea and volcanics, whereas it's 65 miles deep on the land. And so the waters of Nibiru and the waters of Tiamat, which is Earth used to be, Tiamat is the name of proto-Earth, and it used to be located between Jupiter and Mars, and it got knocked to its present position between Venus and Mars. And it made all these ice balls, or ice and rock balls, and it created the asteroids, which if Sumerians were right, they would say, you know, look, the asteroids will be made out of the same stuff as Earth. Well, sure enough, what we found, and it's pieces of Earth. They called it the hammered belt. But in any case, this is the crap that's going around and maintains its position relative to Nibiru. Nibiru itself, which goes around Nemesis. It doesn't actually pass around our sun, but it crosses into the solar system between Jupiter and Mars, where Earth used to be. And when that happens, it comes through on a 30-degree angle to our ecliptic. It causes havoc, and when its Lagrange point of 180 comes through, which is what's happening right now in 2012, as the Mayans point out, it causes pole reversals. It makes the tectonic plates of the Earth shift. It makes volcanoes go up. It makes tidal waves. It's going to melt. Oh, the other thing that's happening is everything has moved closer now to the sun. All the planets are warming up, not just
yep.
Earth. As we move closer to the sun, there isn't going to be a drop of ice left on this planet very soon. And,
all of this fulfills Old Testament prophecies.
Absolutely.
Every bit of it.
The Old Testament was a... it was written a long time after the events,
mm-hmm.
but people were trying their best to sort of summarize things, and it was hard because they were trying to create like one of these guys, Yahweh, as though he were the only God, but his first commandment is don't worship any gods but me, implying of course there were plenty of them, and they weren't gods. That's the whole point. These were just a military dictatorship, and it was their gold mining expedition that settled here and ruled over the earthlings, which they had bred as disposable mine slaves. And, you know, most species on Earth are immune to diseases, but we have like 4,000 diseases because we weren't meant to last, and they deliberately shortened our lives so we wouldn't wise up to how we were being ruled and divided,
mm-hmm.
pitted against each other. Yahweh was trying to create a national religion. He had his men branded by circumcising themselves so that they would look like the Anunnaki, who don't have foreskins, and tried to take over the world. And when his son, Nannar, allied himself with the ancestors of the Arabs, and of course he's known as Allah, but these are just people with big technologies, and their planet gets just as disturbed as Earth when it comes close, and they're gonna be back. They're gonna need more gold, but we've reached the level of sophistication where we say, oh sure, we might well help you with the gold, particularly in the Arctic areas. We got lots of gold, but we'd like some medical help, and we'd like our genes to be freed so that we can have our full potential. We're not stupid savages, but we are space age people, and we are ready to have a unitary voice. That is, we're not going to war with each other anymore, and we're not going to take nukes into space, and we're not people to be ordered around. We don't worship you. We can be partners. It's like the Vulcans and the Earthlings.
Mm-hmm.
We're ready for full partnership and ready for galactic societies to be admitted as members of galactic society, ready to learn and live in peace.
Now, I mentioned earlier there's something you may not know about. Abraham Lincoln wrote in his memoirs that Utah was the treasure house of the nation. One of my first traditional teachers is a fellow by the name of Robert Three Eagles Shrewsbury. I met him about 1990, and we proselyted the Great Law together. But about 10 years later, he developed an interest in metallurgy. And he opened up after about 10 years of putting together all kinds of equipment, and he opened up a lab in Manti, Utah. He had built his own nuclear resonance magnetometer, and his website is at terrafirmaassayers.com. But he can not only find metals, he can find bone. He can find, long story made short, Robert learned. Now, Robert Three Eagles is the guy that led Robert Ghost Wolf to the mummies in southern Utah, and these are pictures that you've probably seen. When Three Eagles was young, he walked all over Utah had some very interesting experiences. But long story made short, when Lake Bonneville was still there, basically the Salt Lake Temple, if the water were in Lake Bonneville, it would be all the way up to the level of the statue of the angel Moroni. But when volcanoes erupted under Lake Bonneville, they created monoatomic gold. And Robert is the first guy to learn how to use a chemical process to release the chemical bonds.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I saw it done. The problem is it's so esoteric, nobody wants to believe it. But I've seen this done. I saw him do it. But he can also use his magnetometer. Matter of fact, a good friend of his developed a similar machine. But he used it. He's passed away now, but he used it to find mammoth bones. And he found all kinds of mammoth bones down around St. George.
Mm-hmm.
But Robert learned what elements were present. Like he knew if it was a Spanish burial, that there were certain elements that were present in the bones.
Mm-hmm.
But long story made short, Robert has found over 200 burials of these red-haired giants. And he's found them all over Utah. Females run around 8-9 feet, and the males around 12.
That's the range.
And he also found there, I think associated with these burials, there were, actually held one of these. It was about a 1-inch in diameter ball, a metal ball. And this is one of the reasons why he was able to find it. But can't remember what element was associated with it. I ought to get you and Robert together on the phone. But anyway, long story made short, Robert taught me a lot of interesting things. Like he knows a lot of the traditional stories. He said many, many, many thousands of years ago, we were invaded from outer space.
Mm-hmm.
And he said during that time, the bad guys really had their way with us until another race arrived and provided us with technology. We were able to fight these guys off, fought them off. The bad guys left, and when the when that war was over, the elders made the decision to put these vehicles in underground chambers, and Robert's got a pretty good idea where they are, but they did this because, you know, we started using this technology to war amongst ourselves. And but Robert possesses a lot of interesting information. And
the Sumerians have the very, very, very similar story when their commander raped First of all, he was trying to seduce his half sister, who didn't want anything more to do with him. She'd already had one kid with him, and she didn't want it. And so he raped her her science officer, and so the council, especially his sister, put him in exile in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who had hid the missiles for the chief scientist, so that nobody could use nukes again, showed him where the missiles were, and so that when he was really hard pressed, he got his son Ninurta to get the missiles out, and that's how come that's where they got the nuclear missiles to bomb Sinai and mess themselves up with the fallout. And so bad guys messed themselves up because they were so stupid with the nuclear stuff. They blew it back on them.
Apparently, these burials, Robert posited that because he's got a nuclear resonance magnetometer, he was able to resonate and figure out what elements were in these balls. And
they started breaking down.
Right. I think there was a special isotope of uranium, but he believes they may be markers, so that when they come back, they can retrieve these bodies or something.
That makes sense. They have a technology, once they have the DNA, to reconstruct very similar beings, and so if they have, especially their royalty, they would love to get the bodies of their royals and keep the genes of those people going. They're Genesis. We're just catching up with them now.
Right.
But these guys were played with all kinds of genetic combinations. They made griffins and minotaurs and all kinds of experimental creatures. Things that you see, like the fantastic looking carvings and stuff. That isn't just people's imagination. These are genetic experiments these guys were doing.
And the Tree of Life, talked about in the Torah. We go back to Samaria. You know, the Tree of Life is a bundle of DNA.
Yeah, and the symbols of the intertwined serpents is a graphic picture of the way our genome is. And so we actually have detailed accounts of how they discovered the X and XY chromosomes, because at first they were just making clones and putting them inside their own females, and the females rebelled, saying, hey, we're not going to just be surrogates, can't you do better? And Ningishita, who's known as Thoth or Quetzalcoatl, was the one that discovered, oh, hey, I know how to make them fertile, and boy, and that's how Tantra got along. They Inanna, one of their leaders, a woman, had all these temples, and her whole idea was to get a man and woman together and to have them love so intensely that the child felt that, and it was really special, and so the child felt this special spiritual sense from the time of its conception, and so that was the original purpose of Tantra.
Oh, by the way, I neglected to mention, joining us also is my trusty sidekick, Mork the Badger.
Hi, Mork.
Mortioning, that is. That is the badger sound. That's the badger sound from Thunderheart when he reached underneath the stairs. The FBI agent got bit. But anyway, he's our resident mind calendar expert, and I'm sure he's got some incisive. He'd love to later on. He'd love to do your mind birth sign reading, and but yeah, I didn't want to leave Mark out of the conversation because I brought him in about 5 minutes into.
Cool. I have my sidekick here too. It's Janet. Say hi, Janet.
Hi, I just wanted to mention that they found the red-headed giant skeletons in Haleakala here in Maui very recently. It was in the newspaper, and then quickly they covered it, they cemented the whole cave in so nobody could get in there, and they just whisked them away so nobody could. It's just one quick story, and then they covered it up, so... Yep. Why are they hiding? Why don't they want us to know?
Oh, our secret government knows what's coming down. And Nibiru is there. Matter of fact, NASA even published the findings. Just where Nibiru is right now, it's in Sagittarius, and what's out there. And then right away they retracted it and denied it and so forth on the pretext that it would cause panic. But, we're sophisticated enough to know that there are visitors from other planets. There have been since time immemorial, and the real reason is they want to keep control through their religions and their governments and their businesses and keep us divided and not realize we are all one people, and the Creator of all made us to be peaceful and love each other.
Exactly. So, another guest of mine, Thomas O. Mills, his mother, because she had run a restaurant in Holbrook and was so nice to the Hopi, when they got money to open up their cultural center, she was invited to run it. And Thomas spent his evenings out on the roof, and the Hopi elders taught him things. And he published a little book called The Truth, but... got to get a hold of that book, because basically, they pointed out, hey, the only animal symbols on the Giza Plateau are the symbols that are sacred to the Hopi religion. And in that book is a picture. It was found way up at the top of the pyramid. And what Thomas taught was that if you take a glass and say you're in the bathtub, and every kid does this, and they push the glass down in there, he said the pyramids were a survival capsule. And he says there was a fresco found of four couples with different racial characteristics, And because apparently they were royalty, because you know they had to give instructions on, for them how to make everything, you know, including fish hooks and. But apparently the Giza pyramids were survival capsules.
Oh, they, and not only that, they were also it's called the Heaven Earth Bond. It used to be coated in electron and it had something on top called the Goog Stone, and and there was batteries that they found on the bottom. A whole series. If you read the Enuma Elish and some of their stuff, there's basically the crystals would send a toroid of signal around up and up and up and up through the capstone, and it goes, and they could communicate faster than the light with the home planet, and it was kind of amazing. And then of course there's all these passages underneath the pyramids that go way down deep to the halls of Amenti, where they have the computers and the histories of everything. And
well, have you heard just recently one of those passages? They discovered a star map. And the way the stars were configured on that map, they figured out that it was 9,000 years ago is when the stars were in that particular position.
Yeah, that's what happened is after the Great Flood, the place where they used to land in Mesopotamia was under mud, and they shifted the landing place to Sinai. And they made the Giza pyramid as a marker with where ships coming in, rocket ships coming in to land there. They had another landing platform that also survived in Lebanon, at Baalbek it was called. And you know, you look at the people use their own metaphors to, you know, flying chariots and fire-eating dragons that the gods built. Well, a jet plane that has fire thing out of its tail and so forth, and Moses, of course, it was burning bushes when the rocket landed, and you know, and so forth. You just realize that these people that had these great cities and mathematics and all kinds of genetics and stuff like that didn't just have stupid myths like ignorant. Europeans of the 19th century thought they were just describing in terms that they could what they
Yeah, I wanted to add, Peter Moon just came out with a new book about his research with the pyramids that are all over Europe and other parts of the world, and apparently they are all connected, or it seems that a great number of them are connected by underground passages. So this was definitely a global community that had huge, sophisticated structures in their high civilization to have it structured or to have it connected like that. Then, of course, they go down. They have stories, or I haven't received the book yet. I just ordered it, but they it goes down to a civilization that's in the center of the earth. So when you were saying that was a preservation of you know, humans, perhaps. They were warned, and they went in underground,
right.
and of course they were safe there when the flood happened.
Well, our Illuminati is doing the same thing now. NASA scientists, Neil Freer reports, are building their own private shelters, and then the big shots, the Illuminati that run things on this planet, have, just like that movie 2012, they are preparing to save themselves and get off planet if they can. This is this huge off-the-record accumulation of money and science and military that is prepared for things, and they're just going to let a lot of people die unless we can break the God spell and the ignorance in which they're keeping us. And your program's helping.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just unbelievable amount of stuff that's happening. And then you got the Michael Cunninghams that sit back and say, oh, you can't prove that. You know, it's like... you know, what a flat earther. You know, that's how I discovered you, was on the Troubled Times Watch Yahoo group, you know. It's just like...
We have such a huge amount of hard evidence written in stone, written in clay. We have people that have been taken aboard their ships and briefed. They are sampling the cattle to see our levels of pollution. They several times have saved our asses from... nuclear accidents, or by taking out the command structures when there was a launching of nukes about to happen. They want us to survive and to stop fighting each other, and they certainly want us to not bring nuclear weapons into space.
Well, you know, I had another friend that Robert introduced me to. This fellow had lived out in eastern Utah back in the 50s, and he was doing some prospecting, and he ran across, I don't want to tell the whole story, I've told it before, but he ran across a woman standing out in the middle of the desert in the middle of winter, and long story made short, she was a watcher. Mm-hmm. And she said she had crashed. She said that she was there to give a furlough to some colleagues that had been there for 11 years, and her ship was forced down by what she called the Dark Worlders. And she said that there was a very valuable piece of hardware that she needed to recover, and a long story made short, I could, you know, the story takes about an hour to tell, but they did recover it, and basically what it was, and this is 1950, we're going to remember, and lest anyone think this is BS, I spent a lot of time at this man's house in Salt Lake City, and you know, after visiting with him for months and months, one day I went over there, and there was a fellow sitting in the yard talking with him, and introduced himself, pulled a identification FBI badge with a red retired stripe going diagonally across it. He says, "Hey, I'm the case agent that worked this." And he says, "Everything he's telling you is true."
Wow.
He says, "Because he says I was the guy that that ran the case, but basically, the piece of hardware that she needed to recover was a box that had information in it that she said that was put together by 1,000 greatest minds in the galaxy to help us recover after the coming apocalypse."
Wow.
And his native name was Badger also. His name was Lee. I can't remember his last name, but... Lee just said it was a box with a lid, and underneath there was some circular objects, and he said, this is back before, I'm talking about, the early 90s, before CDs existed. He said, you hold them up in the light, he says, and it kind of looked like a rainbow, he says, you remember when you were a kid, and he says, they had those funny-looking holograph things that come with the... bubble gum. I said, yeah. He says, they had a hole in the middle. You put them on a spindle, and you push a button, and a little arm would come across and shine either a green or red light down onto it. And then you put a hood over your head, and it would download information into your brain.
Wow.
And there's a lot more to the story, but they agreed to bury it, and somehow the government found out about it, and he didn't go after it for a lot of years. And I had a mutual friend call me one day that said, "Well," he says, "we finally figured out where it was." He says, "Because the map features had changed," and he said, "we knew that Lee had passed through Wells, the old ghost town." Of Wells, Utah, the I-40 crosses that area now, and so we did a map study and figured out where it was, and we were getting ready to go 6 o'clock the next morning, and he said 3 o'clock that morning a guy called. He says, "My name is Scott." He says I'm with the USGS, and he says, "I just want to warn you." He says, "I was at a meeting of 36 government, people from different government agencies, and if you go after it, you must turn it over to us." He says, "If you don't, we will kill you."
Wow.
And, so they did not go after it. And anyway, yeah.
Yeah, well, I want to share, because this sparked a memory. We work with, doing hypnotherapy with experiencers, and so we had this one client, and she was living in the desert. And she had these neighbors, and eventually the man revealed to her, she had become lovers with him, and he says, I'm an extraterrestrial. And she said, oh, yeah? And he said, well, let me reveal you what I look like. And he was reptilian. And this was before David Icke stuff. This was back in the late 60s. And he says, are you freaked out? Do you not want to be around me anymore? She was his friend, and so she accepted him. And it was amazing. Some of the things that we get with our experiencers, our contactees, not everybody are having abduction experiences. They're having real interactions, and this woman had a relationship with this man, and she knew nothing about the UFO lore. She just wasn't in that realm. And this came out of other things we were doing with her. This UFO story just emerged from her subconscious, and it was very true. You could tell by her energy, and it was authentic, and she was deeply regressed. But so we have been interacting for many hundreds of thousands of years.
And Neil Freer says that Roswell was a deliberate sacrifice by the crew of watchers that to give us the technology so we could catch up and join intergalactic society, and what happened is the androids that these Nibirans had created developed their own intelligence and their own autonomy, and there's all different levels of.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, they wish us well. They're trying to save us. They're trying to help us not wipe ourselves out by our own stupidity.
Hey, Mark, you got any questions at this point? Having problems getting Mark on the air for some reason. Go ahead, Alex. I guess we're not able to get Mark on, but yeah, go ahead and continue, would you, for a minute?
Well, it's really time to really ask for contact and for help, and to stop participating in separation, to realize that the organized religions are removing us from our real spiritual recognition that we are all one, and we have to cooperate to save as many people and as much of our civilization as we can, as we reach this critical period when the Lagrange point 180 is kind of come hard times on this planet.
Trying to get Mark through. Was it sometimes you try to put folks in the screening room, we're not able to get them on the air, so bear with us here for a second. Yeah, I've tried two or three times to get him on, and
hello?
Okay, we got you on the air. Okay, good deal. Okay, sorry about that, Mark. We've timed, I think this is the fourth try now. We've had problems in the past. So, anyway, folks, I want to introduce Mark Borcherding, the Badger. And I'm sure, I guess you've been following, or you're probably way ahead of me. You got any comments, Mark?
Well, one of the things when I visited one of the Hopi elders that I visited, it was interesting because some of the things we've been talking to brought it back to my mind, and he showed me a sketch or a drawing, and it was of a petroglyph, and they have a bunch of petroglyphs that people haven't seen, and what was interesting, this particular thing was a drawing. And I had these four, stick figures on it, right? With, like, something drawn on them. And he pointed at them, he says, well, this is kind of like this science officer, and this one's kind of like the captain, this one's kind of like medical officer or something like that, right? And mm-hmm. The little stick figure things had little, almost like little, you know, uniforms with a little symbol or something on them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, one of the things that really inspire a lot of us is the way to settle disputes. In old RIB, when there was too many people up on the mesa and someone had to leave, instead of having a war, they had a tug of war. They had a great rope, and the losers were given food and supplies and help getting settled. And just imagine that instead of killing, to have a celebration and an athletic contest like that. And that's so inspiring. That's where we've all got to go.
Exactly. Hey, if you want, you know, let me know if you need to take a break. We've been going about 55 minutes now, and or if you want to take a breather, Mark could do your Mayan birthday readings.
Okay, that sounds
good.
Sure.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, Mark, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good deal. Yeah,
Janet, love stuff like this.
Yeah, how about Janet? Let's do it, ladies first. What's your birthday?
February 6, 1954.
Okay.
February 6, 1954. Yes.
Okay, so in the traditional Mayan day count in Azolcan, you were born on a day called 3 Caban. It's the 237th day of the 260-day cycle. The number three is indicative of things that have to do with creativity, generally kind of what we call the right side of the brain type of thinking.
Uh-huh.
And then the Caban glyph, that indicates things about knowledge, wisdom, and movement. It would relate to, in their name, Hunab Ku, it says the one giver of movement and measure. So the movement part of that Hunab Ku would feed back into the Caban symbol. If you look at actually the Aztec, what they call the Aztec sunstone or the calendar stone, all the five ages or suns are encapsulated within a very large Aztec or Toltec version of the Caban glyph called Olin.
Mm-hmm.
And that symbol would also relate to the poles of the earth. So we've been talking about pole movement and stuff like that. So this 3 Caban sort of indicates things about, in a nutshell, general intelligence on the creative, kind of the creative side of things.
That matches pretty good. Okay, do
now,
you go ahead.
I'm going to also do it. And I'm going to switch gears here a little bit because I have another system, and it's going to look at it more from the viewpoint of not our current world cycle, but the next world cycle.
Okay.
And it's going to look at things from three different readings, essentially, for it. One is going to be the forward flow of time, backward flow of time, the second one, and the third one is where these two come together, sort of like the doorway between world cycles.
Uh-huh.
So the forward flow of time is symbolic of moving from our present world age to the next one. The backward flow of time is looking at things from the next world cycle flowing back into the cycle, and then where the two come together.
Okay.
So we'll look at that. And when we look at this, we see on your forward flow of time, you got a 12 eek. Blue Otter's birth sign is a 9 eek. So we see an awful lot of guests come on the show that have eek energy somewhere.
Uh-huh. And you're
saying
what?
That energy has to do with spirit, prayer, a lot of things about community and cooperation here. To the extent even pushing it to ordering things and even willing to make a fair amount of sacrifice to do that.
That sounds about right.
Get it. Oh, right on.
And the eek glyph is a T cross symbol. You'll find it all over the place, and it's at all through Central America, and it's at the Chaco Canyon at the Great Kiva. It's also in some of the windows and some of the pueblos. They're more kind of an elongated T, so they're a little bit subtler. It's harder to tell. So it would connect into that. Now, on the backward flow, coming back from the sixth sun or the fifth world, you have a eagle energy. It's about creating the right side of the brain thing that's coming up again. Mind, revelations, visions, and things. And then things about intuition and abundance and new paths. So that, this is power and dimensionality. Things of dimensionality and form. So this is probably stuff, usually when this, I look at this, say this is probably the type of stuff that's probably you may have noticed getting stronger in your life since around a few years ago, even as far back or even further back, maybe than the year 1998.
Wow.
Wow. Well, I moved here in 97, so that was a major change for me. Sasha and I met in 97, moved here the tail end of 97, so 98 was just an incredible year for me.
Yeah, you're not the only one. There's a lot of people. 97, 98 right in there is usually something would happen in 97 and sort of build into 98 for a lot of people. But, yeah.
That's it. I know.
A lot of
my world rocked.
So that is something that probably you're going to notice getting more and more as we move closer and closer in the next cycle. That part of visions and the eagle mental energy part of it is probably...
She's really creating, just like you say, she's making this huge conference at the Fort McDowell reservation for all the UFO and related materials and people, speakers coming from all over. It's just like you just described her to a T.
Yeah, we're doing this kind of came to me in May. I went to a Tantra conference, and I ended up meeting with some people that I'd met at the UFO Congress in February. And so we got together, and Bob Dean was there, and we said, let's do this conference. And so I came back home, and anyway, I'm really making it happen, and this is what I do nonstop 24/7. We expect to have between 1,000 to 2,000, maybe even more people, and we're going to simulcast it and do all kinds. So we're inviting speakers, presenters, and it's very interesting that we're closely aligned, both the Tantra and the UFO people, with the Native American energy. The Tantra conference and the UFO conference are both on reservations.
So that's phenomenal.
We
got those two things. So you had the eek and the ego energy. And then the third thing is where these two things come together.
Mm.
So this is sort of the unity point or the zero point or the doorway, the thing that moves you from one cycle to the next. And it is a, all of it is basically is a new part of it's not currently in the present Mayan Zolk'in. The other two are. This one isn't. This one's composed, both its day number and its glyph are both in a new system for the next sun, next world.
Wow.
And it's a, its name in going in English would be a 16 piece. The 16 energy is universal. It is universal, all things like that. The so peace, things about hope, forgiving will be a big thing. Helping not just yourself but others learn how to forgive.
Yeah.
And all these things that have been going on, all this stuff, everything that's going on, we're up to our armpits in problems that need to be rectified, and that aspect of forgiveness. This 16 piece is sitting in a cycle that is also a new cycle, and it's a in its name for that symbol would be balance, and that's its energy. So it is driving. The entire cycle of which that 16 pieces within, and so balance and peace are going to be a big factors of moving.
Oh, this is fantastic! You are so right on.
And those particular things one native group, the Hopi is said to mean peace or peaceful people. And if you go back and look at the Hopi newsletters that the traditional elders wrote, you know, the four wrote, and I can't pronounce the word.
Tetsuekachi.
Yeah, you got it. That's it. It's online, so you can read them all. But if you go through those, they talk a lot about peace and balance. And they even say the next world cycle could bloom into peacefulness. And they talk about if these symbols and these things happen, a new life plan can occur, and it will lead or involve everlasting life and everlasting peace.
Wow.
So I would think that you might run across, stumble onto some person that's Hopi that might fit in with this particular part of your reading.
Hey, Alex. Has Janet ever expressed any particular interest in the Ark of the Covenant?
Have you been interested in the Ark of the Covenant?
Because that's her Torah.
We know that it was a communication device.
That's her Torah portion. That's her Torah portion. That's her Parsha. Her Torah portion.
Oh, wow.
For
yes.
her birthday. And her Haftorah. And I deduce from your name that at least Alex was born a Jew, but her Haftorah is about Solomon and wisdom.
Ooh.
Yep. It's funny. I didn't know I was a Jew. I thought I was an Italian until I was 7 years old. My father thought the Nazis were going to take over, and so he moved us away from everybody, and I thought I was Italian. When I was 7 or 8, he said, "Son, you know what? We're not Italian, we're Jewish." What's that, Dad?
Well, what a name like Sasha.
Well, he was actually, it's the reverse. He was born Alex, and then he took Sasha as kind of a spiritual name. Or I'm not sure your whole path. I can't speak for you, honey. But
Sasha just means Alex in Russian. It means like I like you, Alex.
Gotcha.
If you're bad, they call you Sashka.
It's like William and Joe and, you know, Robert and you know,
Bob.
So it's just the affectionate
nickname.
Nickname of the formal name of Alex. So, anyway, okay, do you want to do Sasha Alex?
Yep.
Okay, July?
I was born on the stroke of midnight between July 8th and July 9th, 1940, in New York City in Women's Hospital.
So he's officially 1201 on July 9th, 1940.
1940?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Right.
Do you remember your Kaban, your three Kaban?
Oh, he's a three Kaban, too?
No. He's a nine Kaban.
He's a nine.
And he's on the 217th day of the cycle. And so the Kaban is the same energy of basically, you know, we were talking about there before, movement, wisdom, and knowledge. And then the nine also is similar in terms of the kind of connects also to the right brain energy, but more leads on. It's not directly right brain, but it's related because it's more energy of emotional, intuitive, and art. And also female authority type of energy is usually associated with that number.
Mm.
It is also a number that many of the Mayan pyramids, not all of them, but many of them actually have nine levels. Like at Palenque, that's a nine-level thing at the Temple of Inscriptions.
Wow.
And it has a lot of other geometry associated with it that I'm not going to go into. But so that's interesting because you both have, you know, very similar reading there in terms of that energy.
Well, it's really
not
right
exactly
about
the same, but
I've really always associated with the highest females around who are just so charismatic, and Janet obviously is one of them.
Now, when we look at the other one, so we'll look at the other, and we'll go through the forward and backward and time flow, so you kind of remember the idea of that, right?
Yeah.
Or do I need to go over it again?
No, I get the idea. It's very similar
okay.
to what happens in
so
the
on case. The on the forward one, time flow, you have a energy that's about art, creating. You also have that universal number, 16,
uh-huh.
sitting there, which connects with hers. She was on a 16-piece, and it's yours.
Right.
And it's actually a... and it has a star glyph associated with it that would connect into, a lot of times that would connect into the planet Venus.
Mm-hmm.
It can also sometimes relate to the star or star Arcturus. So
mm-hmm.
either one of those two or maybe both might be significant to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On the backward flow, you have a Hunebku glyph, and it's about, and this is, again, like we said, stuff that's probably cropping up since 1997, 98 in there, that time frame, and moving as we move closer into the next world cycle, getting stronger. And it's indicating things about harmony, charity, creating, things, a lot of things are on will, strength of purpose, and discipline, and stuff like that. You know, kind of
that's
like
me.
Warrior discipline or something, you know. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Relating and shaping things.
Mm-hmm. And his Torah portion would go right along with that because it's Parshat Balak, which is about, you know, transforming a tent into a synagogue, a hall of learning, and Janet is about the synagogue, and so you guys are very closely aligned in your as far as your spiritual gifts.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have been tapped by the Creator of all to try to bring about planetary peace. I'm very clear on that.
Yeah, we actually have established the World Peace Association. I have a Libra rising, so you're talking about balance and. And then Tantra is balancing about balancing yin and yang, male and female. So that's, you know, we're very, that resonates with me what you said earlier. So thank
yeah,
you.
That's, absolutely.
Is a unifying position or zero point thing, the bridge between the world cycles, is a manic glyph. And that has to do with healing things. It also has another part of that energy is going into Aquila energy, intuition, abundance, and new paths type stuff. And that's connecting over to hers where her ego energy was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that is an area where both of you kind of are going to have this same type of energy coming in from somewhere else working with you. It may be with you both or maybe kind of coming out from outside of both of you and coming in and helping.
Right,
so
that sounds right on. We're polyamorous, so we're looking for our partners.
Huh?
That sounds quite right. We're head of the World Polyamory Association, and we bring people together in multiple group marriage, which has got not just relating purpose, but the purpose of creating higher order benefits for humanity.
Well, yeah, another interesting parallel. Almost forgot. You know, the Cherokees have a society called the Four Mothers Society. And I didn't know what it meant until I was going through the Zohar through my looking at my particular Torah portion, and the Four Mothers Society was mentioned, and I went, oh my gosh, and you know, I was just visiting for a few weeks, I was visiting Shreveport, and the rabbi walked in, he says, "What'd you find?" And I said, "You won't believe it." I said, "The Four Mothers Society." He says, "What?" I said, "The Cherokees have got a Four Mothers Society. It's the Four Mothers of the House of Israel." And of course, the
wow.
Cherokees have been saying forever that our name for ourselves is Ani Keturah, or Ketua, depending on what dialect. And apparently, we're descendants of Keturah, Abraham's last wife, who he sent away, and his two sons, her two sons away, and blessed to be skilled in herbology and shamanism.
Wow.
But yeah, so it's amazing. And as a matter of fact, that rabbi told me when I explained all the linguistic parallels between Hebrew and Cherokee, he said, "Man, he says you ought to take that on the road. He says you can make a living going to synagogue."
You remember the movie Cat Ballou with Jane Fonda?
Yeah, yeah.
Where the Indian the Mormons kept coming up and saying Shalom Aleichem to all the Indians.
Well, listen, you want to take a quick break? Let's take 6 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's about it for today.
Okay. We'll be back in 5. Okay.
Okay, it'll be about 6 minutes. I'm going to play your commercial. I'm going to play Robbie Robertson's "The Lights," and which is about Indians and UFOs.
Way cool.
All right.
Folks, we'll be back in a few minutes.
Right.
Do you really know where you came from? Do you really understand what's happening? Find out. You're listening to Extraterrestrial Contact, the portal to the cosmos, by listening to Extraterrestrial Talk, the portal to the cosmos, the portal to the cosmos. Extraterrestrial Contact, every Thursday on RenegadeTalk.fm. You're listening to Extraterrestrial Contact, the portal to the cosmos.
There was something strange moon, the white smoke rise. Only the low hum of the lights is stiller. Just going up.
Sasha Lessing and his sweetheart Janet. We also have a caller with a question. Let's see, have we got Alex and Janet back on the line?
We're here.
Yeah, we got a caller from North Carolina with a question. Welcome, North Carolina. I guess. Anyway, well, I guess you don't like what we're saying. Oh, it's fun. Anyway. Oh, well.
Hang him up.
You guys have a line. I'm really interested in Coco Pelle. What can you tell me about Coco Pelle?
Well, I know Pelle in Hebrew is... is one of the permutations for God, but you also got Pele and you know, the god of the volcano, which is a
native tradition of this person who went from tribe to tribe to tribe to tribe, playing
kind of
his flute,
trading
things, and he was revered by all the tribes. Even if they were at war, they would welcome him. And I'm trying to find his Sumerian identity, and I just wonder if you guys had any clues for me.
Kind of a Johnny Appleseed.
Yes.
Kind of a guy. Mark, you with us?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you think?
Well, that's about what I know on the story too. Is he just went around and made the music and had his bag of seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this bag of seeds was critical. He was the one that, you know, made people able to survive by having more food.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to find out more about him, and so I just thought you might have some depth that I, or place to steer me on finding out more about him.
And he had that hump back, and yeah, he's kind of a...
Well, there might be, you know, Gary David, who has a website, the Ryan Zone. He has a little bit of stuff where he's has some Coco Capelli glyphs and some other information. So he might have some additional things for you. And he does some linguistic stuff sometimes too. So he might have some ideas or something that might
help
you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll follow that up. Thanks.
Yeah, we're still researching every day. We piece together all the pieces of the puzzle. So, you know, thanks for the lead. Gary David, and what was the site?
The Orion Zone.
Orion Zone.
Oh, the Orion.
Yeah. Orion.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He was a guest on the show several weeks ago, but I know that he has some, on his website, he has some Coca-Pelli type petroglyphs, and he has some comments and things about it, and you might also just email him, and his email will be there on the site.
Thanks.
So you can email him and just ask him too. He may have some ideas.
What do you guys think is going to happen December 21st, 2012?
Well, I interviewed Hunbatsman, the mine day keeper. And
oh,
I'm
yeah,
totally,
yeah.
I'm told he's, you know, the equivalent really of the king of the middle, the Itzamaya, and he and Carlos Barrios, they both said, hey, there's nothing written in stone about that particular date. They said something's going to happen, and they said it really is, and it's kind of like the Mormon prophecy that indicates, it really kind of indicates the consciousness of the people and where they're living and how they're living as to what they're going to have to go through.
Uh-huh.
Which indicates, you know, that would be almost some kind of divine intervention. One of the shocking things I discovered just as I was starting this show back in 2004, I was reading through Robert Ghostwolf's website, and I discovered, this is how I became associated with Robert. The Hopi elders had said, had predicted right as the Hale Bopp was disappearing. They said 7 years from that time, the red star Kachina would be discovered when the blue Kachina was in the sky, and it may
mm-hmm.
even take a telescope to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
wow,
And I didn't even read that prophecy until that week of the end of the 7 years. And so I immediately got over on a NASA website, and you can Google bluestar.htm, bluestar.htm, and that'll take you to a page that says Hopi Prophecy Fulfilled. It'll tell you the story of what I discovered. And basically, about a week before I got on the NASA website, there was a red dwarf star that was discovered, came out of nowhere. They weren't even looking for it. Turned out it was about 10 light years away. But this particular star, if you go to prophecykeepers.com, there's some information about it. But it's this star and others like it that have been discovered. NASA's talked about the Nemesis concept.
Yes.
And,
yeah. Uh-huh.
It arrived. And it was discovered right as the comet NEAT was in the sky. It was the brightest blue comet ever. So, you know, we know the Hopi, they got something going on.
Wow, it's the same thing that Andy Lloyd was saying, basically, exactly the same. And that NASA and the infrared observatory, which was trying to see what is it out there that's causing the perturbation of
right.
our probes and of the other planets.
Are you talking about the IRAS satellite?
I had it up there for
back
one
in 84.
Day. Yeah, and then took it down and started denying it.
Right.
Well, there was also the Father Malachi Martin was on the Art Bell show, and he mentioned the Mount Graham observatory down in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And Mount Graham is also infrared. And
right
also,
now,
if you look at the South Pole, they got an awful lot of equipment down there, including at least one or two infrared telescopes. Look up Python and Viper, I believe is their name.
Yeah, I know that that Harrington, the head of the Naval Observatory in Australia, had confirmed with my teacher, Zachariah Sitchin, that yes, indeed, Nibiru had been located, and it was coming in and so forth. And right after that, he mysteriously was killed in a so-called accident, supposedly the elite did not want this the return of Nibiru and its Lagrange points to be known to the general population.
Well, I was listening to Kerry Cassidy interview a remote viewer the other day, and he had their team of 30 remote viewers were trying to highly tested and eliminated down his core team. Did two targets, and one was June 1st, 2013. And they had two variations, two verses to look at, two dimensions. And basically they found a major disaster in both, but one had less disaster than the other. And it was based on the belief structure, believing more in remote viewing. So that was the variable. So it seems that we may have some assistance, though, because I was listening to Al Bielek, in the interview back in the late 90s. But his source that came to him from, the Black Projects was telling him that Hal Bopp, they had several different course corrections before, it was on a direct collision course with the Earth. And so this guy came and said, "Al, they got corrected twice. So there's some intelligence that protected the Earth." And so and I forget the guy. I'm sorry, whoever you are that Kerry was interviewing. He said it's so obvious. She asked, "What do you think caused this destruction?" And so he went into Andy Lloyd's information about the dark star. And he says, all these astronomers, it's out everywhere. I think some of the information is being centered here in the U.S. We're not quite getting it, but he says all these astronomers have seen this infrared brown dwarf dark star, and it has the asteroid belt, which is what Dr. Lesson was saying, is at the 30 degrees from Nibiru, and so. What I get, and I'm studying this morning, night, and noon. I stay up till midnight every night just watching YouTube, because I think we are converging on the solution. But what I get is we need to ask for contact. Once that we are conscious and aware and we invite contact, they are allowed to intervene. But until then, they've got to, let us take our own course.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what
I think
get the contactees, the abductees. And what I've been doing in my own right is I've been doing a lot of tantric, kind of shamanic journeying, going inward, and I'm learning how to utilize my power as the goddess connected to source to channel, which I was always very psychic, but I was afraid of channeling because I was raised Christian, and of course you're taught not to give away your power to another source, an entity. But since my husband's a psychotherapist and he's very trained in all these things, he's helped me learn how to channel, let other beings come through me and speak without taking me over. Plus, I personally have had, hundreds of experiences going back to the crib. I was abducted on Johnston Atoll, which is a military installation 800 miles southwest of the Pacific, in the Pacific from Hawaii. 800 miles southwest of Hawaii in the Pacific, and I was there from 95 to 97, and I had was taken by 6th grade, and there were 6 soldiers walking beside me, and I was taken to the edge of the atoll into an underground underwater installation, and I was taken with a boyfriend I had there, and they tortured him, and I sat there and I was made to watch. So I was able to tell with your friend John Mack. Dr. John Mack was one of my husband's colleagues, and we met him at the Prophets Conference early on in 98, 99. We hung out with him for about 3 years every time we had a conference. Those two, they had studied together for years, Dr. Lesson and John Mack, Dr. Mack. And so every time there was a chance, they just hung out together. And so I told him about my abduction, And he was very afraid of those things, and he says, please, I don't even want to hear about it. I'll listen to it this time in the restaurant. I know you need to talk about it, but I don't really investigate those because they're too dangerous. So, of course, this is like 10 going on 15 years later, and he's, of course, dead, and we wondered, did he get, he was hit by a drunk driver that jumped the sidewalk in London. And he was having a conversation with Rupert Sheldrake, who's the one that brought us the information about the morphogenic field. So so the speculation was I think he was taken out. You know, if I just go inward to my own psychic core self, I get a very strong, I know he's okay now. He's on the other side, and it wasn't too bad because it was kind of instantaneous. He was catapulted out of his body, but... So, anyway, that's a bit what I wanted to share about the piece of puzzle that I'm getting. And, of course, you know, you just got to keep looking at it.
But, I would really suggest for all of our readers that you can ask for contact. You can ask for contact in your dreams tonight. And you can even just have the fantasy. Imagine that you are on another planet or you're on a mothership. And you're receiving instruction, and just go from there. Just see what comes in. Don't even worry about the ontological or the reality status of what you get, but just allow yourself, because you have parts of your brain that you are not consciously aware of. If you will just say, I invite contact in my dreams tonight, or right now I'm going to imagine that I'm receiving wisdom from a benevolent extraterrestrial. See what you get, and then call the radio station and let us all know.
Right. And so what you want to do is you invite contact, and they're able to get through to you when you're asleep. And so if you keep training yourself to relax, because one of the tendencies, as Whitley Strieber told us, is that once you start getting contact, your fight-or-flight basic instincts for survival kick in, and you have a tendency to run away. And that will disconnect you from the contact with them. But if over time, don't expect this to happen immediately, but over time, if you learn to relax and you train your subconscious, which will help your conscious mind, that you're going to have contact, then you'll start easing into it. So keep a journal by your bedside in the morning.
Absolutely.
Before you put your feet on the ground, write down your impressions. You're going to start, what I found, and we see a lot of the abductees and contactees, they start identifying some patterns, and some of the mysteries start to gel and become more clear. So I've been finding myself repeatedly on another planet, and they're trying to show me something, and what I get, they use a lot of screen memories so that I don't get afraid and jump back into my body or wake up, you know. And so over the years, there's a strong pattern of what's emerging.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Monroe achieved if you ever read his books, you know, the man who did out-of-body exercises for years, he found some consistencies if he kept a log of what happened when he was out-of-body.
Well, better than that, you know, just get a voice operated, because... Once you wake up and start thinking, you know, you lose your alpha wave.
Right.
And you know, I found a voice-activated recorder. And by the way, I've had two different close encounters. I don't know what they call them, of the fifth kind, but the brief story I can tell you is my son had just turned 8 years old. He's going to be 27 this year. We were living in the Arizona Strip near Fredonia, Arizona. We went into St. George to see a movie, and it was right about midnight, and we came back. This is an area where it's a very remote area near Kanab, Utah. And as we're just getting out of the car going into the house, I was opening the door, and I said, hey, I said, Duane and Joe, my son Joseph, I said that light that's coming from the north, I said, it doesn't have any nav lights. I said, maybe it's a UFO. Why don't we invite it to turn its lights on? Just for fun, let's all ask it. Turn your lights on when you get to the zenith. And about 5 seconds later, that's exactly what happened. It blew up as big as the moon for about 3 or 4 seconds and then continued a southward journey. And then I had another experience in 2000. I was on a mountaintop in Missouri, and I was explaining constellations to an Indian friend of mine about 10:30 at night. And I was trying to explain where Lyra was, and where the star Vega. And he said, "Well, where is it?" And I said, "You see that fast walker, that little satellite?" I said, "In about 10 seconds, it's gonna pass right by Vega." And I did a countdown. And right when I got to zero, a light swept out from we're looking north, kind of north and east a little bit. Sun had set behind us. It was just the barest indication, hint of a glow in the west behind us. But somehow a beam of light shot out in the reverse direction of travel, swept down on us to make it appear as if it was as big as the moon for about 5 seconds, and then it just turned off and went on its way.
Oh, you've been responded to for sure.
Yeah, apparently. And I've had other experiences too.
And it's so important if you've had experiences, you don't have to think you're crazy or keep it to yourself. We know that people, 1 out of 40 people have had experiences of this sort. That's a lot of people. They are here, and they are here to help us, and we just need to ask, and we can get some help that we really are needing. And what you need to know is that the part of you that's receptive can be integrated into your life. It doesn't have to be disturbing. It can actually give you guidance.
Yeah, Dr. Wolf, I was watching an old interview of his. He died, I think, somewhere in the late 90s, 98, around the same time as Phil Corso. And he was saying 1 out of 40 at that time had been taken. So that's a huge, I wrote the number down, millions of people have taken. And the other thing, the invited contact, I used to teach the Penn State UFO discussion group. I was a co-facilitator in the late 80s, early 90s. And every night I'd say, if you're really out there, just to myself, not out loud, just in my mind, they can read our minds, I said, please give me a sign. And every single night, I had a long drive home, every single night I saw a shooting star. They would do something that was out of the normal. It would either go straight over my head horizontally or straight across my screen as I'm driving, going from back to front or straight in front of me. It was never, coming from the side, going down, coming from up, going down. So I think they're waiting for us to wake and say, hey, we know you're out there. We're not even, what we're doing is just coffee. We're not talking about
UFOs
are real or not. We're going into another level here.
That's right.
I'll tell you, we also know
that the spirit of Mescalero, the sacred medicine, the sacred peyote, can really assist you too. If while you're doing a peyote ceremony, you open yourself to the visitors, you're really likely to get them.
And we're going to have James Flaming Eagle Mooney on Sunday night. Looks like we're going to have a regular Sunday night show with him. He's a guy that went to jail in Utah. I knew him when he was working for the prison system back in 94, 95. We're forging a partnership. But I want to tell you about one other contact I had. I was coming home. My wife sent me up to a drugstore one night to get some something, for her time of the month. I had a practice of pulling in the driveway and just getting out, looking up at Polaris and saying a quick prayer. And this little thought came into my head, turn around and face the south. So I turned around and faced the south and prayed a little bit. And over my right shoulder comes this. Now, there's no street lights on this street. The only street lights are like 4 blocks away. There was a ball game going on in the city park, so there's very little light except from the houses. And I saw this thing flying over me from my right shoulder, kind of quartering away from me on the left. And I thought, well, that's a funny bird. You can see birds flying at night. I said, I can't see its wings flapping. And all of a sudden, I said, well, that looks like a ball. And all of a sudden, this huge flying wing, maybe 100 feet over my head, wingspan at least 200 feet, and it had two nacelles, like pipes, about halfway between where a fuselage would have been in the wingtips, and it had made no sound. It was totally black, just floated right over me and just disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've heard similar stories from several people of the exact same thing you're describing.
Have you guys heard the NASA employee that spoke out about Nibiru and the Planet X? We'll play that as we go out tonight. It's 15 minutes.
Okay, wonderful.
Or, you know,
I want to add, I know James Flaming Eagle Mooney. I'm on the office of a Native American Church of Tonto.
Oh,
I'm one of his
Good deal. That's good for you guys, and because he put you up for protection of your sacraments so you don't get hassled.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. But,
so tell us a little bit more about the NASA thing.
If you want to, we'll go ahead and play it.
Yeah.
It's 15 minutes, and we can just, and you're part of the show here if you want to, we'll play it, and you can just listen to it, and unless you want to come back and discuss it afterwards.
I think that would probably be good. We're getting hungry. Time for dinner.
Yeah,
I'll play it, and it'll be the last 15 minutes of the show, and URL will be active, and you can download the show and do whatever you want with it. But I want to thank you guys for appearing.
Well, thank you for having us.
Oh, we love rapping with you.
Yes,
and, I've done interviews on different people's show. If you ever want me or Mark to appear, just say the word. And,
oh yes, well we're just starting. We're actually.
We'll have you on our portal to the cosmos.
Yeah,
oh, that'd be great.
We have several. We're all networking. All the shows are networking, and so let's keep in touch and let's do some other shows together.
Absolutely.
Uh-oh.
And we'll take it out with NASA employee speaks out about Nibiru and Planet X. And thank you very much, folks. Good night now.
Aloha.
Mahalo.
You'll be able to continue to keep your telephone open and listen if you want, or you can just open up your computer and go to the URL.
I'll leave it on the telephone here.
Okay, here we go.
Back in the 1950s, most people aren't aware of it, but there was a scientific storm in America all through the late 50s about this thing out there in space, because the astronomers were all watching it, and that was back when they weren't afraid to talk about it. It was in the science magazines. I mean, I had a subscription to, like, Popular Science, and hell, it was on the front cover of the magazine one day in, like, 1961. And I was really excited when I saw it, because here's this giant red planet on the horizon of the California coast, and a humongous tidal wave coming in towards the coast, and having grew up in the mountains of the Sierras, and this thing in the magazine, it said this tidal wave coming in was going to be at least 3 miles high, and I went and showed it to everybody in the house, and they laughed, and they said, look, it says right here, there's nothing to worry about, it won't be here for another 50 years. Hey, guess what? That 50 years has came and gone, and this baby's out there in the sky. They've been watching it. I watched it, and I can tell you, this thing has got so much trash coming around it. You know how we live in a solar system? We've got 9 planets and a big sun. This thing has got 7 planets and its own sun. But I believe that instead of having dirt on it like our planet does and water, I think this thing is just a big, bright reddish-orange iron ball, because it's giving off all this red iron oxide dust out into the atmosphere. When we thought at first it was just a teeny little red speck of fuzzy red dust in the distance, but over the years as it went by and we watched it, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, about 08, we could see this thing like it was across the street. And we could see that it was a blazing hot ball of fire giving out sparkles of red iron oxide dust for thousands of miles in every direction. And you could see the planet circulating it. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I really am nervous about. I think this thing's got a planet like ours circling it. This is its own solar system. We're about to have a solar system come through the middle of our solar system. This can't be good. But unfortunately, it looks as though that's what's going to happen. Hopefully nothing in this mess will hit us, even though it does say it will in the Bible, leastwise it does in my Bible. It says we can expect all kinds of problems. we were looking at asteroids. Right close to this thing, there's asteroids that are floating around right near the, that are orbiting the main sun itself. These things appear to be about 500 miles across. And as you go back into the tail, you get into meteorites that go back for millions of miles in the tail. This thing looks like a giant red teardrop-shaped dust cloud. And you can see, once if you're able to see it up close like we did, you can see every speck out there. I guarantee you there's trillions of meteorites following this thing. Now, these CIA people that I know say that we're not going to be that close to it when it goes past us. They're saying that in order to attain breakaway speed, when it comes up around the backside of the sun, its speed will at least double, possibly more, which will put it here earlier than everybody is saying it will, and that this thing will probably be about 20 million miles from us when it crosses in front of us. And then as soon as it flips us upside down, we're going to go into its debris field tail and be pelted with meteorites. And, of course, in the Bible it says they will Italian 70 pounds. So if you've got 70-pound meteorites falling like hail, and I can guarantee you they will be falling like hail because there are that many in the tail of this thing. This thing has got a tail loaded with trash. I mean, it's incredible the amount of stuff that's in this thing's tail. And we're going to go right through that tail. And if it doesn't beat everything on the surface of the ground into a flat putty, I don't know what it'll take. I tell everybody, you better be at least 20, 30, 40, 50 feet underground and have either concrete or stone above you, because it'll break through the roof or whatever you've got if you don't. These CIA guys told me that this pole shift will probably happen from start to finish in around 28 minutes. That doesn't give you a lot of warning. When you see that thing out there in the sky, you're going to have to run as fast as you can to your underground facility, because this is going to happen so fast. Now, see, here's another thing nobody's talking about. You've got this giant iron planet that they say is 47,000 miles across, getting ready to come up past us. And when it starts to approach us, it's going to start and have real serious effects.
So is it a planet or a failed star?
It's not a failed star. It you know, I saw this thing up close. It did not look like a failed star. It looked just like our sun.
Right.
Okay? Would you call our sun a failed star?
No. Okay, well, you had said planet. I wasn't sure if it was like a failed star, brown dwarf, or a full sun. So it's a full sun?
It looks to me like a miniature sun, just like the one we have. The only difference is, see, is our sun is giving off flames and stuff, and this one's doing the same thing as it, but it's giving off this red iron oxide cloud of dust around it, and until it got close, we couldn't even tell what was in there. We could see it was hot, and it looked like it was just a dull red when we were first able to discern it through the red cloud, but as it approached, it started to become more apparent that this thing is just orange hot. I mean, to tell how hot it is, I was told that it was, they estimated between 5 and 10 million degrees, but you know, I don't really know if that's right or not. I mean, it's got to be pretty hot, because it's sending all of this red iron oxide dust out into space around it,
right?
And it's got this enormous, and I mean enormous, at least 50 or 100,000 miles on each side of it, this red dust cloud that goes all the way around it. I know when we were watching it, as it started to make the upward swing to approach behind our sun, it was amazing. The red dust cloud settled down. Instead of being round, it started to settle down into a V, like wings, upside down wings.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I wonder if that's where the ancient Sumerians got the idea this thing had wings, because, you know, centrifugal force is a funny thing. When it comes back up around the planet, when we see it in the sky, my guess is it's going to look like it's got wings, because centrifugal force is going to be pulling the red iron oxide dust and particles out to one side, and then as it starts to climb out and go away from us. Listen, I was told that this thing's magnetic field is going to be so strong, anybody that does not have a padded lead helmet to wear will have their brain gutted for everything they ever knew, and they'll be a complete raving moron after this thing passes. They won't know, they'll pee in their pants. They won't have a clue what's going on. because this thing will gut their brain. And, you know, I was reading a deal in my Bible. It says that after this happens that nobody will care because they won't be able to remember it. Well, of course, I was told by somebody the reason that that is because the electromagnetic field from this thing will be so strong because, see, as it comes up underneath of us, it's going to start and pull us toward it. And then, just like a pair of big magnets, all of a sudden it's going to lock onto us. And when it does, it's going to be like the Jolly Green Giant kicked the earth in the ass. It's going to send a jolt 500 to 1,000 foot high. This is what I'm told, 500 to 1,000 foot high shock waves all the way around planet Earth. They'll be so bad that in a lot of areas that don't have good solid soil, it'll fluff it so badly that you'll practically be like you're standing in quicksand. And that this thing's magnetic field will literally gut your brain of everything. And so you may want to give some thoughts to getting you some sheet lead, build you a little lead helmet to wear, you know, like a little motorcycle helmet to protect your entire brain and the back of your neck so that, that way this can't happen. Because, you know, if these guys are right about this, and I'm pretty sure they are because I know for a fact they know what they're talking about when they say stuff. And so, you know, and it does sound reasonable to me, knowing what I do about electromagnetic energy, that this could happen. And it very easily could gut everybody's brain for everything they ever knew, and they'll stand there and pee in their pants and go, gee, what was that? And that's if they still know how to talk. And there won't be any doubt in anybody's mind because this thing's going to look like a big red dragon, exactly like all the ancient Sumerians and the Chinese and all the rest of them that had documented this thing's passing before. It didn't look like a white ball or a snow cloud or nothing. It looked like a big red iron oxide dust cloud with a superheated star in the middle of it. And, I mean, you know, and that's what we've seen. So, you know, I don't care what anybody else says. There's a possibility. There's more than one thing out there. You know, I watched it through the Hubble Space Telescope. And when this thing looked like it was across the street, the Hubble got cut off and they encrypted it. And that was the end of any transmissions we had to watch. And we know that the Hubble, in order to be in the shadow of the Earth, had to be at an angle, and so that meant it was looking downward, and this thing was coming up underneath of us, and I tell you the honest to God truth, I personally think this thing is real close to us right now, but, you know, that's just my general feeling that, you know, and I'm a pretty psychic guy, I have the feeling that this thing is right close by and that we're going to see it any time. I mean, I've been doing everything I could do to get prepared for it to... I'm really worried about what Jesus says. You know, when the fig tree is putting on its leaves, know that summer is near and I'm at your door. And that worries me more than probably anything I've read in the Bible about this whole thing, the parable of the fig tree, because everything seems to be in place for this thing's arrival. And the bad thing is he says, I'm going to come like a thief in the night. Well, it does also say in the Bible that I'm going to make the sun go down at noontime in Jerusalem. Okay, if that's the case, there's only one thing that will make the sun go down, not hit the horizon, down, go down at noontime, and that's if the planet experiences a pole shift.
Okay, I got a quick question that you can probably answer really quickly and then continue from the chat room. Wants to know if you're talking about Planet X or Elenin, and I've never thought Elenin is Planet X. Terrell's pretty
well,
stuck on that, but
is.
I think Elenin is a result of it. It's a comet that's been kicked in.
Elenin is extinction level event Nibiru is near.
Right.
Does that explain it?
Yeah.
Okay, because listen, they've known about this thing forever. And I mean, they've known about it forever. I mean, if I read about it in a science magazine in 1961, that tells you that, I mean, it's only 1,800 years away. How could they not be able to see it when it came around the backside of the last sun and headed this way?
Right, right.
You have to know they've been watching it because if you, you know, Carl Sagan was showing stuff that they took with their old telescopes that was billions and billions of miles away. And this thing's only 1,800 years away. Well, and by 1930 it was only 70 years away. You know, we do estimate that this thing, let me give you a thing, maybe you can figure out your own timeline. We estimated that this thing is traveling around 3,500 miles an hour, okay?
Okay.
That was our estimate of its speed. Now, it has been picking up speed, and that's the reason why we think it's going to arrive early, because when it comes around the backside of the sun, it's got to double that speed in order to attain breakaway speed to leave the sun and not wind up orbiting it. It's never orbited the sun in the past that we know of, so that means that it's going to have to attain breakaway speed to head back out into space. Now, you look at the NASA videos, photos, and all this other crap those morons put on the internet. This thing is coming in. It's going to, as soon as it goes around the top of the sun, it's going to go pew, back out into space.
Right.
And it's going to do this really fast. When it goes past us, it's going to go past us so fast that we'll almost have no time to get ready. That's my opinion. But, you know, just drawing it out on paper a few times and thinking about it, and I went, you know, if this thing picks up enough speed to make breakaway speed, then that means it's going to come past us. You know, this thing, according to what I was told, is that this thing is approximately 47,000 miles in diameter, you know, four or five times the size of the Earth, and it'll come past us, and we won't have a lot of warning, and we won't get to see it in the sky until it's on us. I think the NASA timeline is completely off. I think this thing's going to arrive much earlier than they say it is. You know, I know they're saying October, but, you know, if you look at the, you know, now, I was told that the poles are not shifting at 42 miles a year. They're shifting at 42 miles a day. And the reason is because this planet is rolling over to face this thing. Now, when it goes by, it's not going to push our north pole away. It's going to grab our southern pole with its northern pole. And it's going to be like somebody kicked this planet in the ass. That earthquake that it talks about in Revelations, when the opening of the sixth seal comes, from what I've been told, that's very accurate, because that's exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be a massive earthquake when it locks onto us. As it goes past us, we're going to follow it right upside down. The oceans are just going to be roaring from pole to pole, as you could well guess they would, because if you take a planet that's 7,000 miles across and roll it upside down in 30 minutes, you're going to have some real serious problems with wind and water. We should be preparing to expect this thing to show up.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas Mojo. The very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby. Yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Let the truth